Next scripture reading is from the book of Habakkuk, chapter 1 and chapter 2. O Yahweh, how long shall I cry for help and you will not listen, or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see wrongdoing and look at trouble? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law becomes slack and justice never prevails. The wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, judgment comes forth skewed. I will stand at my watchpost and station myself on the rampart. I will keep watch to see that they will say to me, what they will say to me and what they will answer concerning my complaint. Then Yahweh answered me and said, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so that a runner may read it. For there is still a vision for the appointed time. It speaks of the end and does not lie. If it seems to tarry, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay.
So when my middle sister was pregnant with my niece, Navy, last year, my brother-in-law and her had a really fun time over 9 months, keeping the entire family guessing what her name would finally be. They would give us clues like, well, it's not a very well-known name. It's not going to be a family name, and any gender could be named this, which we could never guess what it was. So my youngest sister and I, we just got really fed up. And instead of guessing names like Joe or Lee or Pat, my youngest sister, Maisie, started calling her names of spices like cinnamon or paprika, or my brother-in-law's favorite, pasta sprinkle, which is what we ended up calling her for about 6 months of my sister's pregnancy. But I actually decided to go a different route and bait my sister into telling me Navy's name by texting her a bunch of bizarre biblical names with question marks after them, like Beelzebub, the name for the Canaanite god that Yahweh had beef with, Abednego, associate of Shadrach and Meshach, who were thrown into a fiery furnace in the book of Daniel, and my personal favorite biblical name, Mahershalah Hashbaz, the son of the prophet Isaiah. Finally, my sister just texted back after that one and said, Aunt Britt, do you really want her to get teased in school? Is that what you're trying to go for? And I said, no, but I'm sure Habakkuk is one of those names that got teased about the playground or a teacher stumbled upon as they were reading roll call in the morning. Habakkuk is one of those prophets whose names not only feels like a tongue twister, but he's not widely known or quoted among the prophets. We're not quite sure the exact time in which he lived, but it's presumed that he was doing his whole prophecy thing somewhere around the 7th century BCE at a time when Jerusalem was under threat of being taken over by the Babylonian Empire. Habakkuk's actually one of my favorite prophets. Not because he's short and sweet and to the point of only being 3 chapters long, compared to Jeremiah, who we'll be looking at next week with 52 long-winded chapters, but his words of challenge and hope take a different direction than most prophets at the time. Habakkuk is not so much a prophet to challenge the people, but a prophet called in many ways to challenge God. And this conversation between Habakkuk and God begins with the words in chapter 1 that we just read, with a painful and honest lament of the injustices that Habakkuk is witnessing around him. And instead of going to the people like most prophets do, instead of waking them up to the injustice happening around them, instead of shouting at them to change their ways, Habakkuk implores God to do so instead. Oh Yahweh, how long shall I cry to you for help and you won't listen? Or cry to you violence and will you not save? Where are you, God? Wake up, God. Yes, Habakkuk has this interesting name to say aloud, but the meaning of his name actually strikes me as telling to his call as a prophet. Habakkuk's name actually means to embrace. And when we think about embracing, we think about a way to show affection or to give a hug, a warm gesture of love and intimacy, sometimes even a way to offer support and care to suffering. But there's also another way to understand embrace that isn't affectionate, but confrontational, like that between an offensive and defensive lineman, or between two wrestlers on the mat, or between boxers in the ring, locked in a very different kind of embrace. In this first chapter of the book of Habakkuk, he is locked into the grit, engaged in that kind of grappling, wrestling in the struggle of this life with God. And while this is not only the meaning of Habakkuk's name, this kind of embracing is central to his call of prophecy, to struggle, to not be satisfied with pat answers, to demand not only a word of justice, but just actions out of this God. And so if that's the case, that Habakkuk is a prophet because of his willingness to challenge God, then many of us in this church would be considered prophets in our time too, standing at our own watchposts, looking out onto our world, our communities, our relationships, our lives, and calling out to God, "How long, O Yahweh? Where are you, God? Wake up." Waiting for God to respond to both our pleas for relief and yet also hear our hopes for change. Well, God does finally respond to Habakkuk, not giving some pat answer, not spelling out the point to all of this suffering, not by telling Habakkuk, "Oh, don't worry your pretty little head, I've got this," but by calling Habakkuk to action. God says to him, "Write that vision, make it plain on tablets so that a runner may read it." Now, the New Revised Standard Version, the translation that I typically use for worship, changes around the Hebrew just a little bit in this reading, to which the meaning of God's call actually changes. It doesn't actually follow the original Hebrew, but instead reads, "Write a vision, make it plain on tablets so that the one who reads it will run." When we do pay attention to those things, when we noticed how the original prophetic words were structured, then we see that the purpose of this vision is not to passively receive it, to pass along to a messenger, but when we read it, it must cause us to leap its message into action, to run as quickly as we can to live out what God is calling us to do and be in this world. And friends, I believe that the vision that God has for Church of the Three Crosses is one we are called to take off running with too. It's a vision that not only the vision team has been tasked with receiving and amplifying for our future ministry together, but we have been a church of runners for some time. From our watchpost at 333 West Wisconsin, for the last 46 years, we have seen great suffering, great need in our city, great injustices in our world. And yet we have not been afraid to be the kind of prophets that lean into the questions, that wrestle with the doubts, that embrace both the challenge and the responsibility that comes with spreading tangible hope into a broken and hurting world. Because even among our questions and our doubts, the insurmountable challenge that this world so often presents to us, we know that this world can be different than what it currently is. We know deep down that the hope of healing and transformation and maybe even resurrection is possible. We know that God's vision is on the horizon, ready for us to claim and name as our future. So many of you know I ran my first half marathon about a year ago, something quite frankly I will not do again. It was one of those bucket list items, you know, that you just work to, check off, and then move on. Something like skydiving might be next, I don't really know. But I'd never run this kind of distance before, and I had no idea even where to begin for the training of it. So I emailed my youngest sister's boyfriend, Blake, for some advice. Now, the reason I emailed Blake was because he is a really fast runner. And he enters a couple of marathons a year, and so I thought I would just He would just like share with me his step-by-step plan that I could just copy from beginning to end. You know, I asked him what pace maybe I should be running at each mile, what I should eat specifically during my training, and even down to what music that I should be listening to you know, get my cadence to my goal run. And so he wrote me back, well, I don't really have a training program I use. I just run every day as long as I can stand it. And I don't eat anything before or during the, you know, running a half or running a marathon. And I listen to very loud, heavy metal music the entire time, which seeking out his advice then started to make me wonder if I really wanted this goal to happen for myself, because while it seemed to work for him, it sounded horrible to me. But at the end of all of that, he said to me at the end of his email, but Britt, each runner has their own way of training and running the race. While each runner will be on the same journey, the same course, if you will, each of you will run it in your own way. You've got to discern how to run it in the way that's meant for you. Friends, the Vision team has spent the last 2 months discerning, listening, writing, and this morning they offer up to us a very big vision meant for us to take off and run with. It's a vision big enough for each of you to see your own reflection in and for each of us to run that message of God's love and hope for this world in our own unique and individual ways, while also calling us to a collective journey in this place for our community of faith to share in. So to hear that call of God's vision for us in our collective voice, I'd like to invite us to read that vision statement together, which is at the top of your bulletin. We'll move on to the mission statement in just a moment. And it reads, as an ever-widening, inclusive Christian community, we are called to transform ourselves and our world to embody God's radical love, healing, and hope. And while every church is called in some way to contribute to a vision like this, Church of the Three Crosses will run God's vision in our own unique way, which is articulated in the mission statement that the vision team has created as the vision statement's refrain. So let us now read that together aloud as well. Inspired by our history of activism, hospitality,
and service, we are called to offer connection, time, and space to anyone seeking spiritual nourishment, especially those who have been harmed, rejected, or ignored by other institutions. Leveraging our ever-evolving gifts and experiences, we gather to worship using progressive theology,
friends, these words of hope and challenge just didn't drop from the sky. They're very much a part of who we have been for so long in our history and who God calls us to be in the future. They have been found in conversation with you over this journeying and this visioning time, the collective work that this church has participated in for some time now. They were written in engagement with our rich history, and they were written as a response to the discernment of our call to participate in God's vision for the future of this world. Friends, we need to be reminded of that vision, because I believe that when we walk around this city and we see the cracks in the facades of power, when we see the injustice and oppression that Habakkuk saw, when we read news of disasters, and when we talk to our friends and family who are struggling with loneliness and depression and anxiety, it is easy to look out from our watchposts and feel hopeless. It is hard to envision a better world alone, a world in which mercy and justice and hope rule the day instead of cynicism and violence and despair. And yet, when we are called to share in holding the vision of hope together, we just might make real the imagination of our souls that truly believes that God is at work and that we have a role to play in it. Friends, from my watch post, this God-inspired, God-given vision is a big and exciting enough vision to cause me to want to run in response. Does it do that for you? Maybe it does. Maybe you are finding yourself ready to jump out of your seat at the sound of it, ready to get work to make it a reality. Or maybe you're still a little unsure of what God is going to do with us and with this, unsure of how to jump into our future together. Either way, I hope you'll stop in and talk with the vision team after worship, who is here ready to receive your responses, your reflections, how you envision participating in both of these statements. But most of all, the next step for us as receivers of this vision is to ask ourselves, how will we run it in our own way in this community and in our world? Where is God calling us to take off running with the good news message of God's inclusive, radical, and transformative love? How will we each be a part of embracing God's vision for our Church of the Three Crosses community? I look forward to the next year of running alongside you and answering those questions together. Thanks be to God for you. Thanks be to God for the vision. Amen.